This is Car Expert.
The Touareg is the better car, but the Genesis was far from embarrassed.
I genuinely don't understand why Apple doesn't buy a car company themselves.
I think these are still a wise purchase, even the 200 series. I think that they will hold their value well.
Hello, my name's Mandy Turner, and this week I'm joined by two car expert co-founders, Al Borsfeller and Paul Marrick. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Mandy. Hello, Al Bors.
Hello, Paul. Good.
I know we can't see each other at the moment, but I can just see the face on Bors when he said that.
I'm actually, you know, I haven't been able to get a haircut or a beard trim for like 2 weeks, and my wife said to me this morning, she said, you look like a homeless person. You need to go and get a haircut. But I can't. They won't trim my beard because I have to wear a mask to go in, and it's kind of hard to do that while you're wearing a mask.
That is so funny. I was actually just about to make a comment about how I won't say ugly. That's not nice.
Disheveled would be the
right word. Disheveled, yeah. You look like a Yeti. It's disturbing.
I've never driven a Skoda Yeti. Have you ever driven a Skoda Yeti?
Yes.
Is it good?
It's okay.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I'm happy to be an okay Skoda Yeti for today.
Well, but both of you guys have been in an okay Audi e-tron this week, and I'd like to get your thoughts on what you thought of it. Well, we start with Albors.
I genuinely literally picked it up from Audi and drove it back to the Brisbane office so we could do this podcast. My very initial impressions are that it's unfortunately a bit too slow. You know, for the money that they're asking, around that 150, 160 mark, and for what I've experienced for electric cars from Tesla, I expected to get in this thing and go, yeah, this is it. Like, you know, it's quick. Now, I'm not saying it's slow as in like it doesn't get you places. It's still like, you know, 0 to 100 around the 6 second, 6.5 second mark. But that for me is now slow in an electric car. So, yeah, I don't know. There's nothing special about it from the outside. I know that's probably the point, is that you're just buying an Audi that happens to be electric, but if I'm spending double the money of what that car should cost because it's electric, I want to feel different, and I don't feel different at all. I feel like I'm in a really heavy boat.
Yep. Oh, well, that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? When we picked ours up, I've been driving around in it for a little while now, and I don't know if you guys know, but I own a Tesla. But the relevance of that boast is that both the e-tron that I'm driving, which is the entry-level, very much base model, the 50 Quattro, has the same battery capacity as my Tesla. And my Tesla does, like, it'll do.
I want to, for anyone listening at home, every time Paul says my Tesla, you get a dollar. So here we go.
You get a dollar in Tesla shares, which could be worth 10 by tomorrow. Yeah. So I'll get maybe 450Ks realistic range out of my car. And the realistic range out of the base e-tron is about 270Ks. And that's partly because it weighs so much. So the base car's weight is almost 2.5 tons, which is incredible. So for those of you who don't know, the platform that the e-tron is on is effectively a modified version of an existing platform. So it's really built for an internal combustion engine. And you can notice that when you open the bonnet. It just looks like they've taken the internal combustion engine out. So they are working on a bespoke electric car platform that will change that. But because of that, you have, you know, 6.8 seconds to 100. Today, on a freeway on ramp, the light went green. I pinned it to the floor, and the guy next to me in a Golf R without launch control savaged me. And generally, Golf R's without launch control are as slow as anything. So, yeah, I'm a little disappointed with that. And I think part of the problem there is that Tesla has set a precedent, even in their entry-level cars. Like, if you look at a Model X, for example, that's 138 grand, which is the same price as the 50 Quattro e-tron that I'm driving, it will do 0 to 100 in 4.6 and has an NEDC driving range of 630Ks. So, you know, obviously, it has panel gaps that are the size of the e-tron, but... yeah, I don't know. I'm just not that blown away by it. And just one last thing that I'll say is that it feels just like any other Audi, which I think is what they've tried to get out of these. And I found that it turns heads as well. So, you know, if it feels like any other Audi, you'll probably get Audi customers buying it, I think is where they're trying to go with it.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how many they sell, because I just don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see what the point is, except for them to just say they have an electric car. I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, you can read up on the Audi e-tron on the site now, but those reviews will follow in the meantime. It's time for this week's car news. Paul, Kia is working on a wireless CarPlay with a dropout fix. This has been a bit of a bugbear for us.
Yes. So it was actually really frustrating when we were testing out the new Hyundai i30 and a number of other Kia models. We would shoot the video and talk about how great the infotainment system was. Then on the way back, it would just start dropping the phone randomly. And we just assumed it was, well, it was my phone initially that had the issue, and we just assumed it was the phone that was the problem. Then the next car we jumped into was an Audi that had wireless CarPlay, and it worked flawlessly. Anyway, since then, we've discovered other people that have had similar issues, and apparently it's a well-known problem that Hyundai and Kia are currently working on. So they've developed a software fix with the supplier that's going to sort the issue out. They're looking to roll it out shortly. It's currently in final phases of testing, and it will be able to be retroactively applied to owners. So if you have a car now, they can apply that fix to it. I don't mean to mention my Tesla again in this podcast, but this is one of the benefits of over-the-air software updates, because you can roll out fixes like this. I actually remember one software update that Tesla did. It would call the last person you called when you opened the door to leave the car. And I kept just calling my brother for some reason, and it was just pocket dial him, and they, anyway, discovered it was a bug, and they fixed it with an over-the-air update like the next day. So I think it'll be good when manufacturers all start moving to this system where you can actually roll out these things and you don't have to worry about taking your car back to the dealer to have something trivial like this sorted out.
Mm. Which models is the wireless CarPlay on in with Kia?
Model 3. Oh, sorry, which models?
Yeah.
Not my Tesla.
Speaking of your Tesla, it doesn't really have CarPlay, does it, Paul?
No, well, it doesn't need it because it's so advanced.
It doesn't need it.
But, yeah, look, this applies to the 8-inch infotainment system. So this is okay. In the new updated i30. It doesn't apply to the bigger infotainment systems because they don't have wireless Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, but the entry-level cars, strangely, do have both Apple CarPlay and Android Auto as wireless.
Okay. While we're on Apple news, boys, Hyundai and Apple have teamed up to work on some autonomous electric cars, so this report says.
Yeah, look, you know, this whole Apple car thing has been going on for a number of years now, where they were going to make a car, then they fired everybody in the, I think it's called Project Titan is what Apple was calling it for a while, and then they fired everybody in Project Titan and decided just to make the software for the car rather than the car itself, and that seems to have changed again, and now it's back to making a whole car again. It is very much in Apple's DNA to have somebody else build the product. So I have no doubt about that. Now, when we say it's going to be Hyundai or Kia to build it, it's actually going to be built in the States. So it's actually in one of their factories in the US, which is, again, very Apple to do that too. So I don't know how much of it is true, but I really would doubt that a company as big as Hyundai would come out and say it if there wasn't at least some negotiations going on. It would be very interesting for Apple to come out with a car. Obviously, they're looking at Tesla's share price and thinking, oh, I wonder where we could get to if we started selling electric cars. And I have no doubt that if Apple was to make a car, it would be pretty decent, at least from a software perspective.
Well, and isn't that the problem, though, that Tesla has, that their cars are great from a software perspective, but a lot of them just aren't built right?
Well, but that's because Tesla's building the car. So imagine if you had someone like, I guess, a proper car company making it and then you doing everything else. Yeah, so it just, I don't know, it'd be really, being an Apple product, I imagine it'll be bloody expensive. So, you know, we were making fun of a Genesis for being 150 grand, but I imagine this car would be, if they do make an SUV, which is probably what they're going to end up starting with, I would like to see how much they're going to price it, because if their headphones are $1,000, I think
well, what kind of idiot would ever buy their headphones?
I have two of them at the moment.
I'm exactly. Just thank you.
For that. I like better, but yeah.
Thank you.
look, it's going to be fascinating. I think the thing is, electric cars, as we all know, are a lot easier to make than an internal combustion engine, simply because they don't have as many moving parts. They don't have, you know, an electric motor is a lot less complicated than a good internal combustion engine. So it's a lot easier for Apple to make an electric Apple car than it would ever be to make a non-electric car. But how far away that is, I reckon we're talking end of this decade. I really do. I know the report says they're going to tease something next year, but I would be quite suspicious if that is actually the case. I really think we're talking 5 years away at the very least before they do anything.
Yeah.
So if they ever do anything, because Apple's very well known to cancel things halfway through.
Yeah.
Pricing aside, Alborz, would you buy an Apple car?
I have already got my order in, yes. no, look, I don't know. I mean, cars these days for me, so much of my interaction with a car is the screen, is the software, is all that sort of stuff. And I mean, I can just imagine a car that just works with everything in my house properly. I think I would. I would just for the fact that it would just work. I think so, yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a scary question to ask me. But, yes, I think I would, yeah.
Well, actually, what about you, Paul?
I don't know. I like Apple products, so if it made life easier, that'd be good, I guess. But, I don't know. They've got a lot of ground to catch up on, and we've seen how hard it was for Tesla. I just don't know that Hyundai has it in its DNA to do the types of things that Tesla's doing at the moment. So I don't know.
I genuinely don't understand why Apple doesn't buy a car company themselves. Like they're close to a $2 trillion company, US currency here. Like they could just buy BMW. I think BMW is priced at like $60 billion.
But they should have just bought Tesla 2 years ago. It would have cost a tenth of what it does now, and they would have just been able to get it all sorted.
Yeah, I think that was a very. I know that Elon recently tweeted that when Tesla was in its darkest days, he reached out to Tim Cook, who's the CEO of Apple, and asked if they'd be interested in investing in Tesla just to get some free cash, and he didn't even return his calls. And I kind of go like, yeah. I have a feeling that Tim Cook might regret that at some point in the future because even if they just bought 10% of the company back then, it would now be worth infinitely more than what they paid for it, even just as an investment, let alone all that they would have learned and all the potential for integration because those two companies are very similar. And I feel like that was a marriage made in heaven that just didn't occur, unfortunately.
Mm. All right. Well, we're going to move on now. I cannot believe that the Porsche Boxster is 25 years old.
Wow. That's crazy.
Really, really, really old. So another milestone for Porsche this year is the 25 years since the Boxster. And the company has released a special limited edition 2021 Boxster GTS, paying homage to the 1993 concept. 1,250 will be built worldwide. And order books are open for Australia. We'll be seeing it for an April arrival. Pricing, $183,904 on roads.
Are you serious? You'd have to be Mandy to buy that.
Actually, that's even beyond me as well, I think.
That's insane.
So it's 9.5 more on the regular Boxster GTS. So I just want to see what you get for that. Well, so you get the same copper-like colour on the exterior. The standard GT silver metallic paint, exhaust and fuel filler efficient silver, a couple of cover
options. You got a nice bag. There's 25 on the rear.
Yeah.
They're about $10 on Alibaba.
I think if you buy five, you get it for a little bit less.
Yeah, a little crazy. 357,000 Boxsters have been sold since it launched in 1996.
I was going to ask how many hairdressers there are in the world. But
careful.
Do you guys like the look of the 2021 model?
I don't hate it. I just, I don't know. People buy them, but... Yeah, I don't know. I have a view on Boxsters, and it's probably an outdated view. This was back when the Boxsters were older, but I don't know, I'm just not a huge fan of them.
But I do like the Cayman. I do like the Cayman. And the Cayman is a great car, especially now that they put a proper naturally aspirated engine back into it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, what I would love to see Porsche do is actually put a naturally aspirated engine back into the 911. Because what seems to be happening now is they're like, look, all you purists that didn't want to buy a 911 because it's a turbo, go and buy a Boxster. And it's like, no, I'd rather buy a 911. That new 992 is such a good car that you'd almost have to, especially at this $180,000 mark, you just beg, borrow, and steal and just buy a base Carrera. You would. You'd have to.
Mm. Yeah. Tend to agree there. Lastly, Paul, the 2021 Skoda Scala and Kamiq 110 TSI stop sale has been lifted.
That's it. So stop sale was announced in July 2020, so ages ago, and it was only meant to last a few weeks, but it obviously didn't. They had an issue with a light, literally a check engine light that would come on, and it prevented them from being able to basically sell these cars. And according to Volkswagen,
unusual for Volkswagen product.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if you're joking, but Volkswagen said the cause was a delay in the airbag signal reaching the engine control unit. It didn't show on restarting the car, even though there was no mechanical fault. Skoda would not sell the cars until the glitch was resolved. So, look, I think it's good to see these cars are finally back on the market, and I'm keen to have a drive because the Scala, I think, will do well in Australia. The Kamiq is a fantastic car. So I think as a 110 TSI, it really just broadens the appeal of that model. So, yeah, keen to have a little steer.
Have you driven the Kamiq, Alois?
No, Mandy, the Kamiq is worth less than $190,000.
No, actually, you know what? I think I picked it up and handed it straight over to William. I think that's what I did. But
unbelievable.
I don't understand. Honestly, I know this is going to sound a little bit crude. I just don't understand Skoda. I just buy a Volkswagen.
No,
it's by Volkswagen.
But
I don't get
sit
it.
Sit in the Volkswagen that it matches up against, and you'll understand why you buy the Skoda.
I still buy the Volkswagen. I just don't understand it. I don't understand why? The brand at all. I buy a Seat because Seat seems like a cool design. But I don't know. They haven't even dumb names for their cars, like the Yeti and the Karoq and all that weird.
Hold on. Ferrari has a La Ferrari. I mean, let's talk about dumb names.
You know, it's not a competition for dumb names. But
no, because they'd win.
Yeah. They probably would win. that Portofino is named after a really crappy fishing town in Italy that you just would not go to.
Seems fitting because...
Oh, God.
Anyway. Off topic.
Yeah.
If you'd like to read up on more news, hit the news link at carexpert.com.au. Now, we've spoken in detail about the Genesis GV80 previously on the podcast, but this time we're going to be talking about it up against the Volkswagen Touareg. Scott Colley has driven them back to back. Hello, Scully.
Hello, guys. How are you going?
Very good. So we might start off with numbers first. What's the pricing with these two cars?
So initially the plan was to test the 3-litre diesel all-wheel drive GV80 against the Volkswagen Touareg 210 TDI Elegance, and it would have been a perfect match at $99,940 for the Touareg and $103,600 for the Genesis. But in the end, we ended up testing a 210 TDI R-Line, which is a higher spec Touareg. It prices from $108,990 before on-road without options, but our tester was actually $117,590. So the Touareg is more expensive as tested, but it does come with a little bit more kit, and it did have some options fitted to get it to that point.
Did the GV80 have any options as well?
Besides a lovely sort of deep blue, I think it was called Adriatic blue finish, it didn't have any. And the main option on the GV80 is a $10,000 luxury pack, which brings a whole lot of stuff in one hit, but our test car didn't have it.
Okay. The GV80 looks and feels premium, in my opinion, inside and out, but how does it compare to the Touareg?
It's very different. The approach that Genesis has taken with the GV80 is a really quite bold one in that it wants it to look a bit like almost like a Bentley from the outside, and it really hits that mark. And on the inside, it's got quite an old-fashioned approach to luxury. There's beautiful beige quilted leather. There's open pore wood. There's aluminium, and everything you touch is sort of soft and feels like a cut-price Bentley, I suppose, in keeping with the exterior design. The Touareg, I personally think, looks a little bit sharper from the outside. I just prefer the way it looks, but realistically, that's just personal preference. They're both good-looking cars. Inside, though, the Touareg has a very different approach. It's got that massive 15-inch InnerVision cockpit in the middle of the dashboard that comes standard in the 210 TDI R-Line, and it's also got a full digital instrument cluster and then a whole lot of quite funky ambient lighting. It's definitely more German. It's much darker in there, and there's less sort of flourish to it. But with the big screens and the ambient lighting, it also looks really modern and feels really premium. Both of these cars, even though they're not a big three luxury brand necessarily, have really, really nice touch points. Everything you press and prod and sit on feels good, which you would hope for $100,000 or $120,000.
Yeah, you know, Scott, I... It's funny, everyone's driving and talking about the GV80 at the moment. It's actually a car I'm looking at buying. Interesting. Would you actually genuinely recommend it for the money? My concern is that the one that I'm looking at is actually close to like 140 grand. You know, it's the 3.3. And, you know, it's more expensive than a Porsche Cayenne. And it's kind of hard to justify that for a brand that has existed for all of, you know, 5 minutes in Australia sort of thing. But against a Touareg, it makes a bit more sense perhaps. I don't know. Did you feel like when you were driving the Genesis you were in a proper luxury car?
So I think at $100,000 it makes a heap of sense. I think at $140,000 on the road. So I assume that's the V6 with the option pack. Is that
correct? Correct. Yeah.
I think at $140,000 on the road, it doesn't. And that's not because of the way it looks or the way the interior is designed, but it doesn't drive with the same sophistication as the Touareg, let alone a Cayenne. So my experience of the drive in the GV80 was that, especially with the 22-inch wheels, in comfort mode, the adaptive suspension is really quite loose. And so on smooth roads, it's great because you get this beautiful kind of wafting luxury feeling. But as soon as you hit a crest or a dip, the body rocks around. It takes 3 or 4 movements to actually settle after it's compressed. And when you hit a sharp edge pothole or a speed bump or something, it doesn't actually control the wheels well enough and they kind of smack in the cabinet, feels like. And I think at $100,000, you're getting a beautiful luxury interior and a beautiful exterior as well. It makes quite a statement. And I think would be able to put up with the way it drove because it's not bad. It just isn't quite as sophisticated as the Touareg. But at 140 grand, the way that Cayenne drives, even though you'd need to put options and stuff on it, I don't think the Genesis is good enough or special enough in the way it drives to justify going head-to-head with the Cayenne.
Does the Genesis have an Australian ride and handling tune?
It has been tuned for Australian roads, and it definitely does get better when you put it in sport mode. I actually think sport should be the default suspension tune. It has a bit more of that kind of assured feel that we associate with locally tuned Hyundai and Kia products, and the body control is much better. But, yeah, in comfort, it feels like maybe there's too much of an American or a Korean luxury influence on it, and whatever the Australian team has done in comfort mode hasn't overridden that sort of that feeling of it's a big floaty car but doesn't quite have enough body control.
The two things that would stop me from buying one is how fiddly the infotainment system is. It's really difficult to use while you're driving, especially if you want to change a radio station or something. They've got this sort of thing that you turn and then you've got a...
Yeah, it's like a computer mouse, and then there's a rotary dial around the computer mouse, and then there's a volume dial, and then there's buttons on the dash, and the dial looks like the transmission dial and the drive mode dial, and they're all very close together. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's kind of like the Lexus infotainment system, but not quite as bad.
No, it can't be that bad, Paul. No. I will not accept it being that bad.
It's not that bad, but it is definitely, there are elements of it that feel a bit Lexus, and you don't want that to be said about your infotainment.
But the other thing is, how can they have possibly still not figured out how to make voice recognition work without a smartphone being paired? So if you're driving and you haven't paired your smartphone with Apple CarPlay or Android Auto, the voice recognition button does nothing. It just comes up with an error message. Then if you do want to pair your smartphone, you have to use a cable. It's not wireless. It's, I don't know.
I just have wireless CarPlay?
No.
So all of the Hyundai and Kia stuff at the moment, we've actually published a story on Car Expert about the 8-inch infotainment system, which does have wireless CarPlay, and the CarPlay drops in and out quite regularly to the point where Kia and Hyundai are rolling out a software update to fix it for owners. But those systems have wireless CarPlay because they don't have sat-nav. My understanding of it is that, and it's either Apple or Google, I don't know which, but they won't license the wireless CarPlay software to Hyundai and Kia because Hyundai and Kia want to make their maps the default on the 10-inch screen, the sat-nav. And whichever one of the tech giants it is, I don't think that anyone at Hyundai would ever actually tell you for risk of ruining that relationship. But they won't do the deal with them for wireless CarPlay until they agree on something else to do with mapping, is my understanding of it.
Well, I should probably get on with that because...
Well, like, I mean, the Audi, RSQ3 I was driving before, it had default Audi maps, but wireless CarPlay. So I'm not sure.
And BMW does the same. So, but yeah, I'm not sure what the hold up is.
All of these, you know, they've had this issue for quite some time, especially the voice recognition thing. And all you ever hear is excuses, and customers don't really care about who's doing what. If other manufacturers can do it, they just need to get on with it. And like, I think if you paid that much money for that car and it couldn't do something as basic as voice recognition, I mean, yeah, it's pretty obvious to me what they need to do to fix that infotainment system.
I think the other thing that really stood out in the comparison was that there are little things like that in the Genesis that you don't get in the Volkswagen. One of the criticisms that we have had previously of some Volkswagen products is that the Arteon, for example, looked fantastic on the outside, but it shared bits inside with the Passat. Whereas the Touareg, although there is still a learning curve to the infotainment, it has what feels like a bespoke system inside. And it feels more resolved as a whole. So for me personally, I preferred the big touchscreen. Once it was all set up, it was easier for me to get around than the Genesis system. I thought that the way the Touareg rode was much better as well. It had air suspension that was capable of going up for off-road and down for loading and unloading. But it was never uncomfortable, and I wouldn't call it quite as sort of floaty as the Genesis, but not once did I go, I wish this suspension was softer. But also on the highway, you'd hit a dip and it would just control the body instantly, and it felt more like you would expect of an X5 or a GLE or a Q7. So there's a lot of things like that, that driving the two cars back to back, it showed that the Genesis is, I would argue, 90% of the way there, and it is a really nice car. But that last little bit of polish maybe isn't quite there, and it's sort of it's a suspension tune and a couple of small fixes away from being a really convincing luxury car. Because at the moment, yeah, there are a couple of gaps in the GV80.
Can I just point out, though, that one of the requirements of a luxury car is to have a badge that has some credibility as a luxury car. Do you think that for the price they're asking, it meets that criteria? Because for me, you know, the reason a lot of people buy a BMW or a Mercedes or an Audi to an extent is because of the badge as much as anything else. Well, the pricing for the Genesis for me seems like it's priced as if it's a Benz or a BMW or an Audi, and it's not.
Yeah. So I think there are two sides to that. I think on the one hand, you need to price your product like a luxury product if it's going to be viewed like that. And I know not so much in the car world, but in a previous life, I worked as a salesman at Harvey Norman selling phones and computers and cameras and that sort of thing.
Don't mention that too loudly.
Yeah, I'll keep that to myself. But I remember there was a Samsung rep came into the store and said, oh, we've upped the price on this next generation flagship phone by, was $200, something like that. And we said, why? And the guy goes, because people didn't think it was an iPhone competitor because it was cheaper than the iPhone. And I think the same thing kind of applies with these cars, especially the Genesis. If you want your car to be taken seriously and considered as a rival, you've got to maybe show some confidence in the product and back that it is as good and price it accordingly. But yeah, I do think that the badge credibility of the Genesis on the one hand, it's got that unknown factor and the factor that there aren't many dealers around. And for the Volkswagen, every single person I took for a ride in the Touareg was really, really impressed with it. And I told them that it has technology from the Bentley Bentayga in it with the active anti-roll bars, that it is a very sophisticated car. And they go, yeah, yeah, definitely. But it's a Volkswagen. You can't get over that brand snob side of things, and that is definitely part of the problem for both of these cars. You know, I personally would like to think that if I had that money, the Touareg is probably one of the cars I'd look at buying because it really is that good. But I can completely understand why people would just go and buy a Merc instead, because the Volkswagen badge doesn't carry the same sort of weight to it.
So actually, out of curiosity, that Touareg, you know, against the Q7, like there isn't really that much in price difference, is there? I mean, it sounds like that Touareg was quite expensive, 118,000. I mean, you can get a Q7 for that for not much more, surely.
You can. So the Touareg, the selling point there, I think for one is that it is a bit different and there will be people who are drawn to the fact it's not a Q7. But I think the Touareg, what it does offer is more for that money. This particular spec of the car maybe doesn't shine it in the best light on value for money, because at 117 grand, it's sort of knocking on the door of the cheaper six-cylinder diesel Q7. But you can get this engine in a car for 99 grand, and it is more powerful than the equivalent diesel in the Q7, the X5, the GLE. It's got 210 kilowatts and 600 newton meters. It's got air suspension. It's got the full active dash and everything. And at that point, when you're up against the entry-level four-cylinder Q7 X5 GLE, that six-cylinder engine is really, really, like, it's very sophisticated. The way it drives is fantastic. It's so torquey and effortless. So, yeah, I think the Touareg is every bit as good as those cars. But, yeah, as the price does creep up, it gets harder to justify because I think even though to get a Q7 to the level of spec you get in the Touareg, you're going to be paying more. But at that end of the market, you're more likely to be leasing the car and it's just another couple of $100 on your lease payment. Well, so the jump is less significant.
Well, listen, even if you ticked pretty much all the options, the Premium Plus package is $5,000. It adds a 19-speaker stereo, four-zone climate control, privacy glass, bigger wheels. You can then kind of – there's really – the panoramic glass roof is $4,000 and the rest is all standard.
I know one of the things you can get in this Touareg that you can't in that Q7 is the active anti-roll bars and the full chassis suspension setup that is shared with the more expensive Q7. I think the SQ7's got the active anti-roll. Mm-hmm. The R-Line Touareg gets that and the Q7 doesn't. That's one of the draws of the R-Line that you don't get in the $100,000 Touareg Elegance. But yeah, beyond that, I can completely understand why you would go the Q7 based on the badge and the fact that, you know, it doesn't share as much with Volkswagen stuff.
All right. Well, we might think about wrapping this up. But before you do go, Scully, who won?
The Touareg won because it is the better car, but the Genesis was far from embarrassed. I can completely understand why you would buy one. For one, it's a seven-seater and I think it looks fantastic, but yeah, to drive and just in the way it's refined inside as well, the Touareg is just that little bit better. So if you are, you know, looking for an alternative to the big three Germans, which was sort of the premise of this comparison, it is the better car, definitely.
Okay. Well, you can have a thorough read of that comparison, which is live now at carexpert.com.au. Thank you very much, Scott Colley.
Thanks, guys.
James Wong joins me on the panel next, and we talk to Tony Crawford about his recent drive in the Lamborghini Evo Spider. Got to say, Crawford looks quite unique in that white, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess it does. It wouldn't be my choice. I saw one in London on a BMW trip I was on, and I was with the BMW guy, and we both loved the grey one that we saw, really dark grey with black accents on it. So that'd be my choice probably.
Yeah.
For a car like that. But, yeah, white, there's certainly enough accents on that. Look, the reason I was keen to get in this car, and I had it planned way before that, but the rain kept making it impossible to probably drive a Spider Lamborghini. So I kept putting it back and fortunately got one day of sun with that car. Oh. And
you took it straight to a track, right?
No, Lamborghini have they don't normally – unless it's a proper track thing like they normally do in Europe or China – so I drove that coupe version of that car, the Evo, at Bahrain F1 circuit, and I was fortunate enough to get some night laps flat out with the chief instructor, Peter Muller, who's unfortunately since passed away, which was really sad to hear. I didn't know that until recently, but I had a really long relationship with him, so he always give me more laps, and he let me chase him on the track, which I did with the Evo. So we did five laps at Bahrain. Bahrain, just quickly, is one of the best tracks I've ever driven on. It's just brilliant the way it flows and the high speed straights and all that. And that car was probably the fastest I've ever driven on track. And obviously it wasn't me, but the car inspires such amazing confidence that I pulled out at 300 k's down the straight thinking I could go into turn one quicker than Peter had been going into it. And I sort of backed off because of protocol. And I said to him later, I said, I really wanted to take you on that down the straight into turn one because I felt like I just had to lift off and then get back on it. But that's the sort of – so I was really keen to find out, you know, is there more enjoyment driving a Spider version of that around the city? Because at the end of the day, you're not on track on those cars very often, if at all. And to hear that naturally aspirated V10, which I have to say is one of the last great sounding engines, it is just phenomenal. As you probably heard on my social video that I posted on Insta, just a quick snippet of that car winding up its V10 into nowhere near what it can do, but it's just, and I've went to the photography session and I said to the guys that, you know what, I've actually enjoyed driving this car at the legal Sydney speed limits because of that noise in second or third, just shifting up and down. You can still get enjoyment from a car like that driving at these ridiculously slow speeds that we have in Australia. Would you buy that over the coupe? I'm still not sure. It's a little bit down on power compared to the coupe. So I'd probably go for the hard top personally, but I could understand and I would not begrudge anyone from buying the Spider and having that roof down, which takes about 12 seconds, I think, and very easy. You can do it in traffic as we did, you know.
How do you feel with a top down in a car like that? It feels like you're on show and everybody is looking at you.
Yeah, and the number plate.
Kind of a bit confronting.
Absolutely. It was always on my mind, especially with a number plate with Lambo. it's pretty much the two things that you wouldn't do. But, look, you know, like I just enjoyed it. I mostly got thumbs up from 95% of people that I went by. So I think everyone respects Lamborghinis. They may not have – it had a period where, you know, sort of the different – not the desired type were driving those vehicles. And I think that's been repaired because Lamborghini – I've got to say I like driving a Lamborghini fast more than I do a Ferrari. They inspire more confidence. And they have an amazing ability to handle corners at high speed. And I think whoever the engineers are at Lamborghini, I think it's Reggiani, the chief engineer, he's done an amazing job over the last decade making those cars go harder, if not faster, than Ferrari equivalents. Can I just say I wanted JWO in this car? And I did everything I could to get him in this car, but there was an age insurance thing that he had to be 30. And
30? Really? Yeah, this is actually 25, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's 30 for Lamborghinis. Wow. And, well, this particular occasion anyway, but I did try JWO so hard. I really wanted you in this car.
Well, and on the topic of me, since you want to talk about me, I actually got a very small taste of what it's like to drive a Lamborghini recently because at the end of last year, after I hopped out of the TTRS review coming soon, that bright green one that was very cool, wow. I actually picked up an Audi R8 V10 Performance and delivered it to Paul Marrick. So I actually got a bit of a taste of what it's like to have basically a Lamborghini V10 behind you. And oh my God, everything that you've been saying, Krolf, about people looking at you, the sound, and you don't have to travel that fast. So we pick up our Audi press cars from the Brighton dealership on Nepean Highway, and Paul's house is about 15 minutes from there, straight down Nepean Highway. So the speed limit's about 80 in some areas, and then it drops down to 60. And I took a mate with me, and we were just so excited to start it up and, you know, be sitting in such a cool, exclusive car. But then once we started going, I could just shift it manually and, like you said, Croft, keep it in second and then third. It makes a wonderful noise. You lift off the throttle, pops and bangs, and then you pull up at the lights and everyone's staring at you. I had a lady videoing me and I look like some pleb in a country road sweater and jeans, and like I'd just woken up as well, so I looked awful, but they were recording me, they were thumbs up, they wanted me to go faster and all that kind of stuff. It was just the feeling that you get when you drive a car like that, and I would assume that the Huracan's on a different level again because of just the allure of having a Lamborghini. It's a completely new thing. That was the first time I'd ever driven or touched something of that
that grandeur.
Just that level of, like, you know, that was like, for me, even though I didn't get to drive it very fast, I was literally living a childhood dream for about that half an hour of being in that car. And it's unlike anything that I couldn't have asked for anything more. I would happily drive it at 50 km/h for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's really the feeling. Interestingly, if you're in Italy, the police will actually encourage you to go faster, the complete opposite of here.
Why aren't we living in Italy right now?
I know, it's so sad. They appreciate good engineering and great cars and the noise that cars make.
That'll be going up on the site very soon, no doubt, Croft, once you finish writing the review.
Yes, it will. Yeah, I've got one to do before that and then I'm straight onto that. I do love writing those reviews, particularly in a country like here where you can't go fast and, you know, mm-hmm. you – initially I thought, why am I sort of picking this up to do 60 and 80 Ks? But as J-Wo said, you can still really enjoy. And, of course, with the roof down, it is fun. You hear that noise. It's amplified times 10. And it's just a wonderful thing. And if that's the best we can, you just accept it and enjoy it, right? Enjoy it for the. And I pulled up at my local coffee shop, and everyone's running out. So that's what supercars do for people. They just inspire this amazing sensitivity and all that, you know.
Good old faithful Toyota Prado. The 2021 model doesn't look like much has changed from the outside, which is a fact, but there's been quite a bit that's changed on the inside. Paul, you've driven it. So what exactly has changed for this year's model?
Yeah, look, the Prado, we had the chance to test the top specification Kakadu. What an Australian name. It's priced at just under $90,000. So it is a massive old stretch of money. They really haven't changed much at all. The exterior looks virtually identical. They've now offered the ability to get rid of the rear tire just as part of an option box. So once you ditch the rear tire, they stick the tire under the rear and you lose a sub tank. So you lose, it's basically the 63-litre sub tank's gone and you have a total of 87 litres instead of 150. But outside of that, it really is just the engine. And the engine's had a whole stack of changes to the actual engine itself. It now produces 500 Newton metres of torque and 150 kilowatts of power. And that just makes it more confident behind the wheel. I mean, it's no rocket ship still, but it, you know, when you're used to tow with these things, they just feel really just behind the times, and you'd have to have a run-up for overtaking people. So that's all been resolved, and it feels far better behind the wheel. But it just does everything else well. I mean, if you're touring around Australia in one of these, you've got a fridge in the middle, you've got DVD screen in the rear, the air conditioning is amazing, it's got plenty of room inside, the ability to whip up seven seats if you need them, and it'll literally go anywhere. We did some off-road testing, and we've got a video at the Car Expert website that you can have a look at. The off-road controls are idiot-proof, so you can literally get behind the wheel, press a few buttons, and it will virtually go anywhere. So, look, the Prado, it doesn't, you know, there is a new one coming, but I think if you were looking to upgrade, I think it's just worth doing it simply because it is just a thing that will just go on forever by the looks of it.
How did you find the cabin? Is it feeling a little dated?
It is, but I'm a fan of beige wood grain, and it met that met that brief very nicely. It has one of the like the old school wood grain steering wheels. There's wood grain on the dashboard and the doors. It's got beige interior. It really is just I shouldn't say old person express, but older Australian express. If you were saddling up to do a trip around Australia, I think my mum and dad would absolutely love this. So, yeah, look, it's pleasant inside. The infotainment system's now better. It's a 9-inch infotainment system with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. You know, it does all that stuff well. We have a new 300 series Land Cruiser coming later this year, and it'll be joined by a brand new Prado probably early next year. So, I think these are still a wise purchase, even the 200 series. I think that they will hold their value well simply because everyone is scared about a hybrid Land Cruiser, and I think that's where they'll be heading with the 300 series and the new Prado. So I wouldn't have any sort of hesitations in buying one of these updated ones at the moment.
Have you driven one, Boars, and what did you think of it?
Now, why do you always laugh when it's a normal car and it's like We actually have one booked, to be honest with you. I don't understand why they're so expensive, and I don't really. No one has ever been able to give me an answer as to why these cars cost so much. Like why would you? Can you explain this to me, Paul? Why is this car so bloody expensive?
Well, I'll tell you why. If you go to car sales and look up the price of a secondhand 70 series Land Cruiser, 200 series Land Cruiser, or Prado, they're all worth almost the same price as they are brand new. They just hold their value incredibly well. I think a lot of people will hold on to them for a long time. And generally speaking, aside from the DPF issues they had with these, they just do everything that they say on the box. They're not the best at everything. And I mentioned that in the review. And you might look at the review score and wonder why it was so low when we talk so highly of it. The problem is, like, in isolation, all of the individual parts of it are not as good as its competitors. So the infotainment system is not great. On road, it's not great. It's not punchy, you know, in comparison to its peers. So, but you know that if you go around Australia, there's a Toyota dealer on every corner, and it's likely to make the whole trip without anything going wrong. And I think that's why they sell so well on the secondhand market, because people know that if you buy a secondhand one, it's going to be perfectly fine and there won't be any dramas with it.
Mm. Well, you've given it a car expert rating of 7.7. You can read the review and watch the video now up at Car Expert. And there goes this week's podcast. What cars have we got visiting our garages next week, Paul?
We've got a lot of fun things coming through. So we're behind the wheel of the Kia Stonich because I'm not from Australia.
That's not it.
If I was
really, is it called Stonich, like marriage?
Well, that's the thing. If you don't want to be racist, you'll call it Stonich. but because I wasn't born in Australia, I call it Stonich for fun, but I think it is Stonic. I'm not actually sure what the history of that is anyway, but it's Kia's small SUV, so it'll be exciting, I think. We're getting behind the wheel of the Great Wall Motors Cannon. What a name.
Cannon.
Yeah, the Cannon.
Or is it Shannon?
Lemon,
but yeah. So it's a ute, and it's funny, they've rebranded to GWM so people don't associate it with the place it's from. The Mercedes-AMG GLA 45S, we're behind the wheel of that as well for a launch review. So it is going to be an exciting couple of weeks coming up, and I'm really looking forward to it. Elbows, I'm looking at your calendar. You've got an R8 Coupe, the GR Yaris. Ooh. A GV80, you'll finally be able to drive one.
I know. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm actually that's the most interesting car I'm looking forward to is the GV80, which is kind of weird, but I really like the look of it, and I really like the interior, and I'm just hoping that it's as good as it looks and it drives decently. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I'm scared to own one, but I'm really looking at it quite seriously.
But what about the resale value? Have you thought about that?
I own a Jag, dude. Like, I think that resale value, it depends, man. That's the thing. I want to go into a Genesis dealer and negotiate and say, this price is ridiculous. Give me a better price. They're going to go, we don't do that. I'm going to say, oh, you should.
That's my money.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. But, yeah, I mean, that's the problem with fixed prices. It's all well and good to charge more than a Porsche, but even Porsche are negotiable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's it. All right. That's a wrap. Elbows Fella and Paul Narrick, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mandy.